Welcome back to the podcast. This is season 2, episode 3, and this week's episode is brought to you by MPB. This week, we're going to be covering what internet photographers get really mad about, stupid terms bashed around on the internet which have become fact, taking time off over Christmas, what to do in the weird time between Christmas and actually getting back to work again, which in our industry is quite a big bit of time. I've got some brilliant oddball cameras that I think everyone should have a look at buying, because although I am Mr. Sensible when it comes to buying camera gear, you know, oddball's always the way I wish I could go. We're going to talk about the start of 2025 and when we should be starting that sort of work-wise. Is it time to diversify in our industry after me being on YouTube for 4 years telling you all to niche down and niche down hard? And then when good enough is good enough, because I get a lot of comments about lackluster stuff. But this week we're joined again by co-host Rob.
Hello, howdy,
Rob.
Howdy.
And it's not that long. It's only 7 days since we last filmed these, isn't it?
Yes. We're in a bit of a rush to the finish line at the end of the year.
We are, which kind of brings us into the Christmas thing and the when's good enough and all the rest of it. But it's very much the final push for the year. I don't know about you, but I'm hoping to have off 6 weeks.
Not so much for me. I'm hoping to have a solid 2 week break from anything with a plug or an SD card or a hard drive attached to it.
And I think it's important though to have a break. Like, I come from a sporting background and we have what's called the off season. And you know, you have to have time off in the off season, not for training reasons, it turns out, but more for mental clarity and just being motivated to do it all again, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, this I think my 10th year in a row without an actual holiday, because I seem to spend all my holiday time working, a lot of it with you.
Sorry about that.
So I always try to make the distinction that that time off over Christmas, where things are generally on kind of a low ball shutdown anyway, I try and have that to myself for kind of a solid 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we work right up until Christmas, like Christmas Eve. And then I shut shop. And when I say I shut shop, I don't do anything for money that I don't have to do. What I will be doing, though, is lots of creative work in that time. But I won't be taking any commissions, YouTube videos. But I mean, there'll still be YouTube content going out because we filmed it already. We'll do some of it today, actually. But I will be in purely self-centered, creating for me mode and just chilling out. But I'll probably take a solid 2 weeks off at some point in that gap where I don't do any work. Like you say, 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks is enough, isn't it? That's what you have as an athlete.
Consecutively, I think 2 weeks is good, especially when you're used to working 6-7 days a week. Yeah. To have all of a sudden 14 days at your disposal is a gift from the gods, really.
Yeah, I think I've been averaging 70-hour weeks for the last quarter. Because I let some of off the gas a bit, the previous ones. We're playing a bit of catch-up now. But next year, I'm going to try and stick to like a 50-hour work week. I think that's a reasonable work week.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's normal for normal people?
Well, I mean, the 40 hours is your industry standard 5 day a week, but yeah, none of us work 5 days a week. So yeah. Yeah, 50 over
50 hours,
6 days ish. Okay.
But yeah, so I think, you know, taking time over Christmas is important, and it's normally when my film cameras come out. I've already started defrosting film because there's a bit of a process between freezer to fridge to camera. So we're defrosting.
Well, much like the Christmas turkey.
Well, yeah, pretty much. It's very much the same thing. Everyone else is getting the Christmas puddings ready. I didn't know this because obviously I'm not a very homely person, but it's called like Mix In Monday or something like that. It's the Monday you're supposed to mix in your batter or whatever it is.
No, but if anyone's got smarts, you buy one, but you buy them in January and you put it in the freezer for the whole year. So you're buying the fanciest M&S most luxury pudding you could get for about £2.
I must say, we have a lot of discount Christmas puddings through January at home.
Yes, that's absolutely
my favourite foods.
That is, and if anyone hasn't done that before, absolutely do that. Go out shopping, you know, 2nd or 3rd of January and buy all the Christmas puddings.
My other favourite thing, because advent calendar chocolate tastes different. I like to get the advent calendars discounted like 10 pence each and just like eat them like a hooligan.
Yeah, but it's not good. It's not good chocolate though, is it?
I kind of like it. It tastes slightly of cardboard, slightly of plastic, and just despair. But it's good. I like it. We're all good, I think. But yeah, taking that time off is key. Now, there's some key things that I do when I get back before everyone else gets back. So the whole industry shut basically till 3rd week of January. But in that time, I make sure all of my files are organized. All of my computers are updated. All of my camera, well, I say I do, you'll be doing this. Yeah. All of the camera firmwares are updated. All of that really boring stuff that you forget to do. I check all my batteries. I check all my memory cards and SD cards and all of that, you know, that stuff which will like trip you up later in the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's normally a very expensive month because one, in the UK, you have to pay your sole trader tax, which is your personal tax. And you know, I know this catches somebody out every year. You also have to pay 50% on accounts. If your tax bill is 20 grand, it's 30 grand on the last day of January. So that's a fun day. And then you pay the rest mid-year. Not financial advice, by the way, just I know every year somebody new gets tripped up by this and hasn't saved the tax on account.
Yeah.
It's also when my financial year ends, my limited company in December. So I've got that to finish, all the account ends and year end stuff. So it's all that boring stuff I get done. And it's normally very expensive, not just because of tax, but because of all the stuff I realize that's broken. I mean, today, what did we order today just on a random?
Oh, you've had a teleprompter, you've had some HDMI leads, you've had a DTAP to micro USB, so you've got more torque in your focus motor.
Yeah.
Just nonsense little things.
And that's what, £200 all in? 250 quid?
Yeah.
On nothing, just bits. So when it comes to the January one, I know for well, £3,000 to £4,000 is leaving my bank account on that day when we go through the kit and work out what broke this year and what is hanging on by a thread. But I like to do it in one big go because then I know that like I'm set.
Yeah.
But all the million and one. And
it's almost like that's the I mean, it's still winter, but the spring clean of everything is like, right, I'm now set for the year. Let's go. Let's do this.
Exactly. Exactly. And we also like to clean the studio properly. Have a deep clean done. These ladies come in who are lovely and like literally just anti-back the world and bleach it.
So of course you've had Theodore Barksville running around the place this year.
Yeah, he's currently just shredded a stick on the rug, which is great because my cleaner's on holiday at the moment. So that's me on Monday morning. But, you know, I'm enjoying having a dog here because it's normally just me by myself, I'd say, for the majority of my working week, followed by 15 people being in here. Like, it's either chaos or quiet. And I like both. I don't think I'd like to have, like, three of us in here all the time. I prefer the, like, we've got a full crew and we've got no one.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost, again, you've got organisational days, you've got creative days, you've got the boring book days. But then when you've got a full crew, so, right, today's a shoot day. Let's do this.
Shoot day, get an Uber in, beers afterwards. It's the one. We're going to have some shoot days coming up soon, actually. We've got a shoot to do before January still, which is very exciting. And I think we're going to be able to film it with studio access. So that's good. But yeah, I think, you know, having that break over the new year and getting those things done within it is just, I don't know, it's such a good time to do that boring. I know it's boring, but it's a good time to do it. Years gone by, we used to go away in Christmas in January, but you know, the kids are getting old now, it's more expensive.
Yeah, well, that's it. And you know, they're getting bigger and more independent as well.
Yeah, gone are the days of like five holidays a year. And yeah, I think the eldest, he's old enough not to be wanting to go on holiday with us. The youngest, dropped him off at school and he'd been a little bit naughty and I was like, right, I'm going to walk you to the door. The look on his face is the worst thing I'd ever said. And I went, what's wrong? He went, it's just so embarrassing. I was like, I know, that's why we're doing it.
I mean, you know, why have kids if not to embarrass them, honestly?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's part of the joy, isn't it? You know, my mum did it to me and I'll do it to my kids. Yes,
it's a rite of passage.
Yeah. time for Christmas is key. And getting back into it, it is the third week of January in the UK. That is when the industry opens up again. Anything before that, marketing-wise, is a waste of time. It doesn't work, does it? There's no one there. You can, you know, and every year I say this, and it's like, oh, there'll be nothing in December, nothing early January, and every year, and it was a massive shoot early January, and all my plans go wrong. But generally, statistically speaking, it's going to be twiddling thumbs and sorting stuff out.
Yeah.
And hemorrhaging money. It's probably the most expensive month of the year compared to income. Like, the ratio is not good. But
I think that's the same. I mean, almost regardless of what walk of life you're in, January is a bad month for everyone, I think it's fair to say.
Everyone hates January. It's the same with the YouTube side, obviously, selling workshops, selling like the subscriptions and all the rest of it. No one's got any money because you get paid before Christmas and then January is a long old month. It's a full 31 dayer and that's a long time to be
waiting.
And
often people get paid early.
Yeah, so it actually becomes for the Christmas shop.
The 5 week month.
Yeah. Oh, I don't miss being on payroll for that. Like, at least I always know there's money. And how much there is, rather than going, oh, I've got to wait till then. It's, I don't know, swings and roundabouts. At least on the other side, you know it's coming. It's a
yeah,
that'd be nice. But yeah, so what makes internet photographers mad? Now, this is something I've been doing more and more on in recent years. Is sort of like reading comments on YouTube videos, and what I've noticed is it doesn't matter what you do, someone's mad. And I think it's important. I try to listen to these angry voices because often there's something true within them, I think. Often not as well, but
as Obi-Wan said in Star Wars, it's true from a certain point of view.
Yes, yes, and I think the anger. And I was talking to, I don't know if people watch The Photographic Eye with Alex Kilby, really nice guy, and I was chatting with him, and I was like, the hatred in the comment section online has increased significantly this year on my channel. And I was like, how's yours? And he's like, it's exactly the same. Like the amount of like abusive comments, hateful comments is like, it's just become a real, I mean, internet photography has always been a toxic place. I don't know if you remember the forum days of just people spouting, arguing pedantic points within something which is factually incorrect anyway. But YouTube's become that now. And it's definitely the comment section on YouTube is just full of hatred. And I showed you some today. It's just people going on political rants.
Yeah, completely unrelated to the subject matter.
I was talking about a lens, but, you know, somehow we've gone into a political rant, you know. There's a lot of hatred out there. And it feels like, when reading the comments, everybody, and obviously this is just a absolute hot take on this, everybody assumes that every bit of content is made specifically for them. And if it, like, I've got people commenting on the videos, and I've checked other videos to see if it, I was like, oh, am I just really bad at this? Can we have a lot of hate here? But it's across the board. People are like, this is not the video I wanted it to be. It's like, okay. It's like,
Sorry, my bad.
Or I already knew this. It's like, cool. Loads of people didn't. Like, I did that one on Friday. It was a bit of a bad day at work. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to bash out a YouTube video so I feel I've achieved something. So that was my best performing video this year so far, and it was about zooming with your feet and the saying.
Yep.
And loads of people telling me about how my interpretation of what people think of it is wrong because they think something different. I'm like, yes. And still, your interpretation of the original saying was wrong. It was by Haas, the original saying, zoom with your feet. It has nothing to do with focal length. It's all to do with getting in and amongst the action as a street photographer, documentary photographer, war photographer. And James, is it Nightschwitz? Narrower? I can't think of his surname now. War photographer. His thing is like, if your photos aren't good enough, you're not close enough.
Yeah.
But we were talking about perspective. And a lot of people getting very angry because it didn't align with their interpretation of somebody else's interpretation of something which had nothing to do with the video, but it had become a misconception. And like, I don't know. Do you see a lot of anger online? Is it
not so much? I mean, I don't really have a YouTube channel in the same way that you do, so I don't have a platform where I'm speaking to people. On the groups and stuff I'm part of, and sort of Instagram and Facebook, more the kind of independent movie scenes, people are generally a bit more chill.
Yeah, I find the acting ones are much more chill.
Yeah, because let's face it, I think most people in the independent world are trying to keep a lid on it because they're all looking for work.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So I think there's an anonymity on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. As there are on forums and, you know, on you know, the Xbox Live and such, you know, gamertag, whatever it might happen to be. And it's wow, that guy needs to take a chill pill. But who is he? Nobody knows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's worrying, though, because those people are amongst us. They are. They're out there. Could be me. Maybe we've got a secret Xbox gaming thing.
Yeah. Could be that, yeah.
Could be that. It probably isn't if I don't know what it's called, is it? But yeah, I think there's a lot of anger out there at the moment. I don't think it's photography specific. I think it's just in the world. There's a lot of anger.
I mean, we've just had a double election year.
That's never good. Both
this side and across the pond. And yeah. I don't think things, without getting too much into politics, have ever been more polar than they are now.
No, absolutely.
And I think all of that, now that they're over, you've got a bunch of people that are extremely unhappy about the results of both elections.
Yeah.
And you've got those that are extremely happy and extremely validated and emboldened by said.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And as such, there, well, I've got an opinion now and I'm going to voice it. God damn it.
But I mean, I get a lot of DMs on Facebook, and sorry, I don't reply to all of them, from people in the Facebook group saying that they don't dare post in the groups because they'll be ridiculed. They'll be... And, you know, it's just, I mean, that's on Facebook where people's actual names are attached to it. I mean, we've only ever had to ban a few people, and I'm sorry, men, but I've only ever had to ban men. And I've looked at the statistics, and there should have been 7 women banned in this time based on the ratio.
Yeah.
But it is men who do this behavior predominantly in my Facebook group, which is like, I think it's just below 10,000 people. So it's a decent population size.
This is the tin house group.
Yeah. But it's just like arguing for the sake of arguing. It's, photography just seems to have got really toxic. And I went to the photography show at the NEC this year, and that was just bizarre, is the best way to put it. It was like marketing strategies from the 1970s where they'd got half-naked women selling everything on every stand. It was just a half-naked woman on each stand, which again, before people say, I hate nudes, I don't. But when it's all middle-aged men walking around with 70 to 200 white lenses on around their necks, and it was all kinds of wrong. And it's just, I don't know, it worries me a bit that's, maybe it's always been this way and I've just not been privy to it because I've not been on Facebook.
Well, everything runs in cycles, isn't it? I mean, I remember obviously coming from the car audio industry. You know, we remember in the late 90s, early noughties, the Max Power days.
Yeah, well, I used to hide those mags under my bed for my mum.
I mean, literally, they were top shelf mags that a 16-year-old boy could buy legally.
Yes, we could.
and then there was a massive kickback against that. And then, you know, these days seem to be coming back again. So
yeah, maybe I'm just getting old and becoming a fuddy-duddy. And the reason I wanted to bring this up was the anger and the sort of the conviction in people's statements for being correct. It's like, you're like, a lot of my videos, like, you're wrong in what you're saying. And sometimes it's personal opinion, because I'm giving someone my take on something as an opinion, which is most of what I'm doing here. Sometimes it's because of some other curveball scenario they've thrown into the mix to make it wrong, because they're looking for, well, he's not right if you add this to it.
Flat earthers.
And then sometimes they're incorrect, but they say it with such authority. And this is where the misinformation comes about. And this is where the video came about the zooming with your feet thing, because I did a video about zoom lenses and loads of people are like, yeah, but you can zoom with your feet with a prime. And I'm like, no, you can't. That's not how it works. But because the internet is unmonitored and it is unfiltered, it's just like comment after comment. And if somebody who doesn't know better reads one of these comments, it's like, oh, yes, that person's saying this person's wrong. I'll agree with them. Because it fits my...
I mean, all I would say is on that, try and do the vertigo shot with the prime.
Yes.
And good luck to you, is all I've got to say.
I don't know. It does feel like it's gone very toxic, and it does feel that there's a lot more false information on photography. And I always fact check what I'm doing, and I'm no longer able to use the internet to do my fact checking.
Well, we're not in the middle of a pandemic anymore, so all the disinformation is have to find something else to move on to. So I think it's just like a plague of locusts moving from one cornfield to another, and they seem to have landed in the photography genre at the moment.
It does seem to be that way. But like, if I'm ever going to do something about a technique, I always fact check what I'm doing, because sometimes, although I might be able to do the technique, the rationale I have for doing it may be incorrect, or the reason I think it works might not be that reason. It might just happen to work anyway. But I used to Google stuff, but Google is useless now. You're on page 7 before you find something which isn't just a ad farm sort of website or, you know, selling something. And then I tried ChatGPT and it farms incorrect information. Like, on almost everything I've searched, ChatGPT has been incorrect in one way or another. So now I'm back to using my books on the bookshelf again to find the information. So I've got some pretty good books. I've got the, obviously, Ansel Adams trilogy, which is like everything you need about photography. But there's no information on Google anymore that you can trust to be correct in photography. And then forums are just worse.
Well, it's just squabbling seagulls, isn't it, most of the time? So mine. And everyone, of course, everybody's right.
Yeah. I guess so. It's.
You know, the old who shouts loudest is obviously the most correct.
Well, yes, that's quite true in our house. I'm louder, I'm older, we're doing it my way. But yeah, no, you know, I think it's worrying for future photographers wanting to learn stuff, because the internet is not the place.
No, and this is, I mean, all these things start off as a solo hobby, because you buy yourself a camera for whatever reason, that, you know, you enjoy photographs, whatever it happens to be, and, you know, you decide you want to upgrade something from an iPhone, you know, I want to work with a proper camera, whether that's a film camera, you know, lenses, and then of course you get bitten by the bug and you go off on your little journey. Now, if you aspire to be anything more than that, you know, whether that's a, you know, a semi-professional, professional, or, you know, to your level at some point, you know, a commercial photographer, you know, there is a journey. Now, the entry into that, if the first thing you come across is absolute hatred and vitriol in every forum and that you join, you think, I don't want to be any part of this industry. This is horrible.
I tell you, if you want to see some really horrible stuff, go and join some of the groups that are camera specific, like the Canon R5.
Oh, the fanboys, yeah.
Yeah, oh my word. It's, yeah. But, you know, these. I was speaking to my girlfriend about this and she was like, Scott, these people have always existed. You just don't socialize with them. I was like, yeah. That's true.
But
that's,
there's a reason you don't socialise with these kinds of people. You know.
The reason I don't go to camera clubs and stuff like that.
I mean, my friend of mine once said that you can tell an awful lot about a man by the local pub he drinks in and the company he keeps.
Yeah. That's pretty true, actually. It's, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm becoming old, bitter and resentful. Maybe I'm just reaching that point where I just hate everything. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to start a screen recording. I'm just trying to cut that F word out.
Demonetized.
So obviously the bit you're all waiting for with this week's sponsors being MPB is looking at some banging kit you could have bought. And what I've done this week is I've not gone for the price bracket I did last week because, you know, I thought I'd try something different. I've gone for fun stuff you could buy or stuff that I couldn't dream of owning that I could now go and buy today. And I'm going to start this off with the Phase 1 P45 Plus back, which is a slightly cropped medium format sensor, but it's a CCD. It's, I believe it's 45 megapixels, which is the name of it. But it's what I nearly bought many moons ago. And I was going to buy it secondhand. And for this, on a camera with two lenses, was £10,000, which was, at the time, I was like, I could get it. Maybe I could, you know, I could make it work. And I was like, no, it's too much money. So I spent £1,000 instead, which was much more sensible, on a 5DSR. But I really wanted it. Anyway, guess how much the back is today, the digital back.
I'm going to say something in the £1,500 region.
£800.
Oh,
£800. What a banger. £800. I mean, these have got high shutter actuations, but it doesn't really matter because there's no shutter in there. I can get one here. But, oh, this is like brand new, excellent condition, 2,000 shutter actuations, £1,000. there we go.
And what's the cheapest thing you could put on the front of that?
You'd put a Phase 1 DF body for £400. So
again, £1,400 for that.
And then you need a lens, which is £200 for the 80mm. £1,600 medium format. It would look sick. It's
CCD. Spare batteries, £2,000 all day long.
Oh, for £2,000, you could probably get two lenses, yeah. Wide and telly. And the Mamiya 120 f4 macro lens is insane. Like the manual focus one from back in the 80s. We used to use that all the time on pro jobs. It's really good. We obviously rent the blue ring one now. But
yeah. But I've always been a fan of Mamiya. So.
Oh, I love the Mamiya phase system. It's good. Which brings us through, talking about film cameras. I didn't know this, but MPB on their platform have got film cameras. Now, obviously, I want a Leica M6, but I can't. There's no justification for a Leica M6. But what I do need is a new travel camera because my point and shoot travel broke. Now, you can get the Contax, which is a great camera, but they are on hype price at the moment. So a Contax T3 is £2,000 for a point and shoot camera. Takes film, just point and shoot. But what you want to get is the Ricoh GR. You can get the GRV or the GRS. Between £500 and £800. These cameras are like cult classics in Japan film, like street photography. And it's the same camera as the Ricoh GR3 digital one. So the film one's between £500 and £800. The digital one's about £800. These are like those pocket cameras. The reason I'd want the film camera over the digital one is twofold. One is I don't shoot digital very often for personal work, although the X100's putting pay to that. The other is the film one has a viewfinder and the digital one you have to look at the back of the camera, and nothing irks me and nothing is a bigger ick than watching a photographer shoot using the rear screen. When I see somebody pull out their mirrorless camera like this and look at the back screen taking a photograph, I can't say the types of thoughts it gives me, but like
I will give some pushback on that a little bit.
Oh, go on then. We're about to fall out here.
No, not at all. Right. So if anyone with a DSLR has done the very thing you mentioned, where you're shooting in live view, get out.
Yeah.
Right. However, having used a few mirrorless cameras myself now, I would rather do that than look through the EVF.
I mean, the EVF does suck on...
Yeah. So, and let's face it, that's all it is. It's just a smaller version of that at eye level. So you might as well just shoot with the 5-inch screen or whatever on the back of it.
Yeah, but you just look like an absolute knob.
You do look like an absolute tourist.
Just, but, you know, you've got to suffer the fact that we're all on mirrorless now. We've got to look through that viewfinder. Just look through it. Dude. Like this like thing where they hold it like this, like, oh, yeah. Oh, it makes me violent. But there we go. There's two great point and shoots you can have. Now, medium format cameras. So I watched years ago the William Klein documentary, and he shoots in a Leica R4. I then bought a Leica R4, which is the SLR film version of Leica cameras. And obviously I sold it a month later and I realized I was never going to use it. Then it was, you know, the lenses were extortionate. So I was like, oh, I can get a digital Leica. I can't get a rangefinder because it doesn't really suit my work style, but they have a medium format called the Leica S3. Now, the problem with Leica is you do pay a lot for the name.
There is Leica tax, that is a real thing.
It is, but they are beautiful things. So this is a 64 megapixel medium format camera. Second hand, guess how much it is?
Oh, like $6,000.
No. 9,300 second hand. But outrageous. I mean, these are beautiful cameras. It's got the rear screen has got the same setup as the Phase 1, where it's the four buttons, so it's like super idiot-proof, which is great. That's why I love Phase 1s, because you can just hand someone a Phase 1, and within 30 seconds they know how to use it. Because there's not that many. I don't understand how other brands get so many menu options in there. But Leica is similar to this, but the viewfinder is beautiful. And everything's beautiful. The whole thing is just beautiful. And I'd really... This is what I'd buy if I was a hobbyist. I'd buy one of these and some beautiful lenses and I'd probably be $30,000 deep. But obviously it makes no financial sense.
No, none.
But it's not a financial, it's not a business decision, is it? This is
back to that V12 Jag again, isn't it?
Yeah, this is exactly that. Whereas what I'm actually probably going to get, as you pointed out earlier, is a Mazda MX-5 from the 90s. In racing green though, we'll still have it in racing green with the lights. Now, a more sensible purchase here. This is the camera that when it came out was groundbreaking. This is the Canon 1DX. This is their sports shooter one. It came out because for ages, so they bought out the 1DS Mark III. Then it was the 1D Mark III was the sports version of that, but it had one weird bug with autofocus, which made nobody buy it. And now the cheapest chips, I'm like, it can't focus on a clear sky if someone's moving left to right. It's like, but that, I mean, I guess people are shooting ducks, but there we go. It's the least of their worries.
You better be shooting birds, bought a 7D because you had more range on your lenses.
This was before the 7D came out, I think. Yes, because it was the 1D Mark IV that was out when the 7D came out. So the 1D Mark IV came out, and that was around for ages. And that was in midway between APS-C and full frame. It was like a weird crop sensor. And then they brought out the 1DX, which was... I mean, the 1DS was the big camera of my starting era. But the 1DX, as I was more... into photography and making a living from it, was the camera that came out. This had like some insane, I mean, this won't sound like nut specs by today's standards, but it was 14 frames per second.
And you could get 20 if you turned the mirror off.
Yes, that was it. That was the one.
And it sounded like a Gatling gun in the pit.
Yeah. The shutter, now this is where people mess up buying these. The shutter life for them is 400,000. Not what's it normally, 150,000?
Yeah, they're thereabouts. I mean, it's their claims and what really happens are two very different things.
Mine have always been well over that. It does 1080p video, obviously.
Nobody shot videos with them, though.
Maximum ISO of 204,800. I'm sure by modern cameras, that's nothing. I don't even know what my Fujifilm does, but we never used to go above 1250 when cameras didn't do these sorts of great things when I used to shoot outside of my studio. But guess how much this camera is today?
Well, I know it was about $6,000-$7,000, I think, back in the day. So the 1DX, I bet it's still holding strong money. I still bet it's about $800-900.
640.
Oh, that's a lot of camera.
That's a lot of camera. I'm looking at it now.
If you're shooting sports, just buy that.
It's only done 90,000 shutter actuations.
Well, that's barely running.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's like a year when I used to shoot. I mean, it's a tank.
I mean, I remember being studying a pit at Glaston Budget, and one guy stood next to me had one of these, and it was just relentless. It just did not stop. It was just like 20 frame bursts just every time. And there was that, and this was like again like year one of my first ever camera. I'm a little 650D, and I thought, I definitely had small man syndrome in that.
Oh, I remember shooting music and all these photographers having ridiculous cameras. We were like the Nikon D3s back then,
yeah,
which are like the low light monsters. And I was turned up with a 5D Mark I, and I felt so inferior.
They were fairly fast shooters as well.
Yeah, they were really fast shooters. And they had more than one autofocus point, which I didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You see, the 1DX was the first Canon sports camera, at least, I'm going to say that. It wasn't so much a focus system, it was more witchcraft. It would just always hit what you pointed it at. I don't know how it knew. It was incredible.
I'm tempted to buy one for my portraits here, but I feel that I'll be disappointed after the 5DS.
Yeah, it's not. I wouldn't say it's a portrait camera, but if you were even thinking about shooting sports, why would you buy anything made today? Just go and buy that.
I know, it's beastly. For the money as well. Like weddings too. Why not use that for weddings? Slap two of those.
70-200 on it, happy days.
Yes, you can get 70-200, 24-70 for a grand, secondhand. Two of those, £2,200, you've got... You wouldn't miss a shot.
No, absolutely.
Beast and if you did, it's not your kit's fault.
And again, you know that was built to go to the Sahara Desert, the North Pole. Yeah. You know, it was. They were absolutely bulletproof.
You definitely handle a wedding in Groovy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and again, they were fully weather sealed as well.
Yeah. And, you know, we used to be really big on the weather sealing issues when I was shooting outdoors and stuff because our kit would get hammered. But nowadays, it doesn't bother me. Obviously, I'm in the studio. It doesn't really... matter.
I remember one camera in France that got left out on a time lapse. It was still clicking away, we just couldn't find it because it was pitch black.
Yeah, we could hear the clicking sounds, but not the... that reminds me of what we were talking about earlier, actually, about the holidays and stuff. We used to travel quite a lot for work.
Yeah.
Not since Brexit. That's ruined that one for us.
Well, Brexit compounded by a global pandemic.
I know. We'd regularly have like 4 or 5 shoots abroad. But yeah, not anymore. They just zoom in to my studio in Leicester. That's really miffed me off, that has. But yeah, there's this week's options from MPB. I'm quite enjoying the shopping. I think it's going to be quite expensive for me. I don't think there's going to be a...
There's going to come a point you're going to get tempted, aren't you?
Yeah, there'll be no profit margin on this sponsorship. Yeah. There'll be
probably the day after the dust has settled from your tax bill in January, you'll be like, how much was that Leica again?
Oh, no. Do you know what? I keep thinking about doing something like that, but it just makes no sense. Like, if I'm ever a hobbyist photographer, I'll go and buy stupid cameras, but I have to buy the best image quality for the best price.
Yeah.
That's, and to be honest, that currently is Fujifilm. For what I do, you know, it's different for different things, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something you'd really use commercially, the Leica. And it's,
people do, though.
People do, but I don't think for the kind of work you do.
No, there's one lady that does... Oh, do you know what? There is somebody who does it. I'll try and think of that. I'll try and get them on the podcast because starting next week, we've got guests on every week.
Yeah, exciting times.
Which is good. Bit nervous about that. Got to interview people who know far more than me and are far better than me at what I do. That'll be very humbling, I think, maybe.
Well, this is why I hunted you out in year one.
Yeah.
For that very reason.
Yeah, but it's because I looked like I knew what I was doing. It turns out I didn't know what I was doing. But yes, there we go. Which brings us through to our last two topics. When's it good enough? And should we be diversifying into 2024? And let's talk about when's it good enough. Now, this is something you come across with me quite a lot. So what a lot of people see on the internet is like, oh, you could have done this. Like if ever I share work on the internet, they're like, oh, that's not good enough. That should have been like this. This should have been. And I know, obviously, I open myself up to criticism by sharing stuff online. But there's always something which someone picks out. And I was speaking to one of my one-to-one people recently. And they were saying, oh, I just want to get to the level you are so I don't have to compromise on shoots. And I was like, no, mate, no, I compromise on every shoot. You know, whether it's 100 grand a day or 10 grand a day, there is compromise to be made because the client always wants more than the budget allows for. And that goes through to YouTube videos as well. Someone was like, oh, you could have done better examples in your YouTube video today. I'm like, I can't, there's not enough money to do that. Like, it's a business. Everything runs to, and I'm sure you'll know, like, when we're doing stuff, I'd be like, yeah, we can't spend any more time with that now. That's got to be good enough.
Well, normally it's kind of, you hand me the image for retouching, and my first question is always, where's it going?
Yeah, that's a big one.
Because is it just going to go on Instagram, or is this going in print in your portfolio? Because they're two very different amount of times that's been spent on that image,
exactly.
given that brief.
Because they're very, and the same even with clients. So when we're editing for a client, I'd be like, yeah, you can spend all day on one photograph, or we've got to get 10 done in a day.
Yeah.
Because that's the budget, and we've got to stick to the budget. And the reason photographers go bust is because they do everything perfect. It's like when we did those portrait shoots, we did not edit them perfectly because we had to get them out there. And we're still not finished editing it at all. That's, I don't know when that's going to happen. But you've got to go, well, how much money have I got to throw at this? Like, what's the budget? Because, you know, when it's just you working by yourself, it's easy to go, it's just my time. But you could be spending that time actively making money.
And then this is the thing, and that, you know, and this is the tin house and everything's ethos. It's your channel's always been about the business, and this is the key word, the business of commercial photography. And a business has costs. Now, if you were to pay me for a month to retouch one image, oh, but how much do you need to get paid for that to make financial sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, we've had the odd job where we've had mass retouching budgets. But nowadays, there seems to be the same budget, but more, like they've still got the same budget, but we're shooting more in the day. And there's GIFs. And there's these things that take up.
GIFs. So,
yeah, they're an editing nightmare. They're good to shoot, good to look at, bad to edit.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just so much like that needs, I don't know, finessing.
I mean, everything needs some level, you know, in something that you're putting out for a client at least. You know, there's none of this straight out of camera JPEG, there's your SD card, sir. You know, that doesn't really work in or fly, at least in the commercial world anyway.
So, no, definitely not.
So there's definitely an expectation that some things are, but then some things are reasonable and some things are unreasonable, given again, the time allowed to A, do the shoot, the time allowed for retouching, because all of these things have a value. So, you know, you've got to look at the numbers, and this is where, you know, the business side of things come back into it again. It's all right, based on that, Rob, we need to get 10 images done today. And that's it.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things I see holding back photographers, and I try, like whenever I'm working with them, I don't do many one-to-ones anymore. We've got sort of like limited to no more than 5 people on that mentorship at any given time, because the amount I'd have to charge, again, this comes back to when's it good enough? The amount I'd have to charge to actually make it financially viable is more than people who need it could afford. You got Teddy just coming in for good
Mr. Marshall coming in for a fuss.
Now I've lost my train of thought. Now he's just roamed on in. What was I saying?
When is it good enough?
When is it good enough? That's it. I completely lost it. What was I saying before that? He's distracted me with his cute little face with a mud stain across it.
Well, we're talking about, I mean, I mentioned, you know, the time as a budget, and you've got, say, for example, that based on the budget from the client, I've got to get 10 images done today because that's the only thing that makes financial sense.
That was it.
You don't have 10 days to do it. So
I was back. I'm back on it. And anyway, these photographers, they're spending so much time getting it perfect. And they talk to me about their shooting methods. And they're doing 2 days of pre-lighting or a day of pre-lighting to take a single photograph. I'm like, just take the photograph for the love of God. Like, the amount of time people are spending not doing the thing because they want it perfect. And what actually happens is they don't do that much better and they do far less of it. And the best way to get better, and again, I don't agree with these like 365 challenges where you take a shot a day, that's completely pointless. You have to have time to reflect, but it's just keep shooting, like keep doing more shoots and then critically evaluate the work or have somebody critically evaluate the work. Not on the internet, like a proper person who's, you know.
Well, you have your own in-house critique.
Yeah, I've got many, many in-house critiques, thanks to my, you know, youngest. He's very good at being that. My girlfriend's savage when she looks at my work. She'll tell me exactly what's wrong with it and whether it was a bad idea or not. And then it goes to Karen, who's an art buyer, goes to Pete, my agent, it goes to Andy, the TV agent. And probably a few people in between, to be honest. But you know, the amount of time, you know, when we did the podcast, we decided to do it 1 week. I bought the microphones. We did it. Like, if we'd have spent ages working out the best angles, the best, like... So today we've had to change the shots around. You've probably noticed we've got different shots today.
Yeah, I mean, this is now season 2, episode 3.
Yeah.
And we've just... for audio quality alone is the reason that we made the big change.
Yeah, I mean, we could have looked at this season 1, episode 1 before filming it.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, very much, if anyone you know wants to revisit those, anyone that hadn't seen the first couple, they're definitely worth a watch.
Yeah.
Because it was very much, Rob, I bought all this stuff. Does it work? Okay. Well, while you're here, let's do one. Okay.
Yeah, but like, you've just got to get it done. And I think it's probably one of the biggest things that stops people who do have the talent from succeeding is the procrastination, is the putting it off. And perfectionism isn't perfectionism, it's anxiety. And it's just worrying about, you know, what other people think, whether it'll be good enough, whether you can do it, whereas really the best thing to do is to just do it. So I wanted to do portraits. I just booked in, like, was it 12 models?
Yeah.
Got Teddy's tail smashing through the table. Because, you know, that is the only way to do it. It's the only way to make any progress is to do it and mess up.
Well, I'll give you another example. So one of the, what I believe to be the greatest debut album by any band ever, and you know, in the comments if you want to prove me wrong, Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses.
Yep.
They went in the studio for about a month, hyped most of the time, smashed it out, one of the most seminal rock records ever done. Now, fast forward a number of years to Chinese Democracy. Took 20 years to make. What an absolute wet fish of an album. Terrible. Was it worth the 20 years? No. Just get in there and make the music.
Yeah.
Man.
I often think as well, your instincts are often right. Not entirely true. If you are a talented photographer, your instincts are right. And not everyone starts being talented. I definitely didn't. I sucked for years. If I'd have just gone on my instincts when I started out, I'd still be shooting at a local camera club. But, you know, it's, you just got to get on with it. There's, you know, there's no time like the present. It's like we started the studio access thing. We just started it. And my web guy was like, do you need to test it? I was like, well, worry about that when it's a problem. And, you know, we filmed loads of content, got it on there. Kept filming content, keep filming content. We're like uploading every week at the moment.
Yeah, more done today.
I'm doing more tomorrow. Just do it. Give it. I've told myself Studio Access is going to run for 3 years. In 3 years, if it hasn't worked, I'll sack it off. Mm-hmm. Same with the podcast. We're going to finish this season. And if we can get sponsors, we'll just keep doing it. And then in a few years' time, we'll go, is it worth doing? Is there an interest in this or not? So.
And I think you know, you raised a very important point earlier, whether it's photography or, in fact, even the podcast. You do need that time to reflect.
Yeah, you've got to have reflection time.
That moment of introspection is quite valuable. Like the amount of times that, you know, I've looked at stuff that I did from back in the day and I was like, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
Just come on, Rob. What on earth were you thinking?
The amount of my life choices I made back in the day and I think, what was I thinking? But there we go.
So you definitely need that time to learn from that, digest it, put it up in the old grey matter, and take that then into the next thing you do.
Yeah.
And then the process repeats, and that's how, you know, that's how we grow and get better at things.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I do actually, which I'd like to add to this, is like, and I'm more prone to this in YouTube now than in photography, because I've got to a point in photography where it's quite difficult to know what I don't know at the moment. But in the YouTube realm, every time we finish like a certain batch of video filming, I'm like, what can I do for this next batch to make it better? One thing only. Like, what's the, so this time it's been, how can I make it easier to get to the point of pressing record? Mm-hmm. How can I remove resistance between, because I've got loads of ideas, it's just filming it. Sometimes I was like, I've got to get the camera, get the light. Blah. Like, what can we do to make that as quick and painless as possible? Previously, I think the next thing we're going to be working on is just make sure all the audio aligns so that we go from one mic like this to another mic over there to another mic over here.
Yeah.
They don't sound hugely different. So rather than having, we'll probably end up with presets, right? This is the perfect preset for this.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing because the phenomenon of proximity effects on a condenser microphone cannot be replicated by anything.
No, exactly. But it's trying to find like a happy medium where we probably downgrade this a bit and upgrade other ones. And
yeah.
So it's like,
or you just end up using lav mics for everything.
Well, I was wondering about that. We thought you should have backup lav mics on these here. I've started using lav mics for my voiceovers on the computer now. I bought a little adapter to go XLR into
a recorder.
Yeah. So, but there we go.
I mean, it's never a bad thing to have backup audio.
No, exactly. As I was wondering about these, should we be getting a backup audio feed? Like just lav ourselves up.
In fairness, you've got it in front of you and it's monitoring. So unless your computer switches off, you pretty much know that
it's not plugged in and the battery's on 50%.
Yeah, they're pretty good, these things.
I didn't realise it wasn't plugged. Well, its battery's not as good as it was. It's been hammered for years, this has.
Which is a running theme with most of your kit.
Everything gets battered here. Everything, like, yeah. it is bad. I don't sell much of my kit when it's done. It's just retired to like
well, I say, scrapyard. Off to the glue factory in most yeah. cases with it.
It's like, this has literally stopped working after 7 repairs. Yeah. But yeah, there we go. So diversification, and with that in photography work. So for years I've been telling everybody, niche down, niche down, niche down. It's easy to niche down. And everyone's like, Scott, you're niching up. you've got still life, you've got food, you've got drink, you've got motion, you've got portraits. And yes, I am. And yes, I am changing things. There will be a detailed video on this and a much more detailed one on Studio Access. But there'll be a video just on this topic on YouTube, and there'll be a huge one where we'll get Karen down for the day on Studio Access. Because it's important. The industry is changing yet again. And my opinion on it and how you should be conducting yourself has changed. And I am obviously diversifying, and not just in photography, in all of my businesses, I'm diversifying. As an agent, I'm diversifying. As a YouTuber, I'm diversifying. And as a photographer, I'm diversifying, because you have to. But here is how I'm kind of seeing it at the moment. And of course, this may not work. This is not like, do this because I've just started it. This is what I'm doing. Follow if you want, don't if you don't. But like, this is what I'm doing this year. I am diversifying the genres of photography I shoot in, but I'm keeping my style succinct. Everything will look like my paintbrush has gone over it, but it'll be on everything. Like, give me a person, I'll apply my look to it. Give me a pencil, I'll apply my look to it. Ask me to shoot a documentary, it will look like one of my photos. You know, everything will look like my work. But I am going to broaden the subject matters, just because there are so few jobs out there right now. It has been a very quiet year. We had a couple of briefs come in last week, but not like usual. It's, I don't know, what's it like in your other industry? Is that...
Well, things are generally okay in the world of like retail and you know what people are sort of doing and buying, but it's not been a year where anybody's felt busy. It's one of those that the numbers at the end of the year all look okay, which is
that's good,
which is generally quite a good thing. But in certain places, in certain sectors, you know, things have appeared very quiet, and everything you've kind of managed to do has seemed like a bit of an effort.
Yes.
Whereas it's been, you know, it was just almost like, just take my money in previous years. And this time you've really had to kind of graft a bit this year.
Yeah. I mean, actually looking at my numbers, it's not been too bad. But it feels like it's been awful.
And that's the key. It hasn't felt easy this year.
No, you know, it's been a grind.
Because it hasn't been easy this year. And that's the thing.
Not helped by the excessive holidays I've had.
No, but then we kind of touched on this, I think, in one of the podcasts in the previous season. It's... You can do one of two things when things aren't going well or appear not to be going terribly well. You can either sit there and say, well, what are you going to do? Or you can say, right, well, I'm going to be proactive. I'm going to take some positive action to, you know, improve the situation. Be that, like yourself, start a YouTube channel, you know, create a different platform like Studio Access that you started. You know, so you think, right, so I've got, there's things I can bolt on to what I've got additionally, yeah. And let's see how these go, you know, rather than just sit there and complain, well, it's quiet, well.
Yeah, you've got to be proactive. And I talked to my photographers about this as well. Like, if it's not working at the moment with what you're doing, change.
Try something
like,
else, yeah.
Like, there's a real snobbery in photography that, like, if you're not a photography purist, you're not a real photographer. I'll tell you what's not a real photographer. Somebody who's making no money in any means whatsoever and is poverty line.
Yeah.
Because that's not cool. Like, go and work in a bar. Go and work in a restaurant. Like, go and work in a warehouse. You can do delivery driving for Amazon this time of year anyway.
Anything. I mean, you do what you have to do to feed and clothe yourself. That's exactly. That's like base level. Like, yes, I understand it. It might be hard on the heart, hard on the mind, in that, oh, well, I've failed. Well, you know, times are tough. You know, look what the world's been through in the last 4 years or so.
Also, people fail all the time. Like, the amount of my businesses that have failed is insane. Like, I mean, one of the first things I started doing when I moved to this place here was selling physical backgrounds. That failed. Pretty hard.
I remember that.
I've still got loads. I've got hundreds of pounds of them back there. And what I hadn't factored in was I'd have to go to the post office every day. That is not sustainable with my work schedule.
Well, you didn't even drive at the time.
No, I didn't. I was walking with them like under my arms, like an absolute numpty. Yeah.
With a 2 meter backdrop.
You know, I tried it and then went, this doesn't work, and shut it down. You know, so a few people have got Tin House Studio backgrounds.
I think that
around.
Was the first thing of Tin House, wasn't it? Was the backdrops.
The backgrounds, that was the first thing we did. That was before the YouTube channel.
Yeah, it was, long before.
Did a few different things. Did workshops in person. Stopped doing that. That doesn't work. That's not financially viable. We did workshops for brands in locations, but they didn't have enough money. You know, even big brands. So, you know, you just got to try things and move with it, haven't you? You've got to keep...
Yeah, and
keep rolling with it.
And also find things that work for you that, you know, you're happy doing that don't completely destroy your soul.
Oh, exactly, exactly. Like, if you're not happy doing it, it's real. Like, there's things I wouldn't do with the Tin House Studio business, ethically, which make me feel really bad. I'd rather go into a normal job and have to sack this off and do those things. And there's some of them that I know I can make a lot of money doing. And it is sometimes when you start going, oh, it's been a bad month, it's like, just pull the trigger. Like, there's certain things I could launch today that make me a fortune. But I just ethically disagree. And I won't say what they are, because I want other people, like, oh, this person does, and they must be an absolute. But, like, I just can't do it. I'd rather go and have a job.
Well, you still have to sleep at night, and that's the thing. You have to, you know, be comfortable in yourself, whatever it is you're doing.
Exactly, exactly. And it would no longer be what I want it to be if I was doing those sorts of things. So rather than shilling that, I just... you know, made with what we have. And
plus, if you do move into the wrong sort of areas, or not so much wrong, but wrong for you personally in terms of, you know, your mindset, that what you will inevitably do is destroy the thing that you started in the first place.
Exactly. So you might as well get a job. But yeah, I find the thing really weird, the snobbery around photographers having jobs. No, but, like, you're not a real pro.
Right. So again, I'm going to throw this back at the amount of hatred you got when you started that channel. Because every time you mentioned, oh, my retoucher is doing this stuff. What do you mean you don't edit your own photos? You're not a real photographer. like it was like, right. So firstly, I'm going to clue out how the industry works. So most of these guys barely touch their own cameras. You know, at the top level, you know, it's all done for you. You roll up, press the button. Yeah, mate, it's my photo. Check me out.
Yeah, well, you're still off. I don't even press the button.
You know, you got Digitech firing it from the computer. It's just, yeah. So, you know, even at that level, people are like, well, you're not a real photographer because you don't edit your own photos. No, I'm a real photographer because I've taken the photograph. I'm not a real retoucher.
Yes.
This person does this because they're better at it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I probably would have thought that I didn't even know, you know, when I did my first photo shoot, I turned up with my camera and my light and I did my shoot. The last time I, like portraits, for example, last time I shot portraits properly, I had a Digitech, three assistants, there was hair, makeup, wardrobe. They had assistants as well. I literally had somebody, I took the shot and they took the camera out of my hand and held it for me in between. And then it went off to a retoucher. And even small jobs, like locally, we used to shoot those local magazines and stuff.
Yeah, so I remember those.
You did we did the one with the helicopter. Yeah. We had a helicopter fly over. That was awful. That was badly organized. That was classic local...
Work. With very jumpy large horses, helicopters flying in close proximity to jumpy large horse.
Yeah, that was a bad idea. But it was a fun shoot. It looked awful.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was 9 flash guns taped into one softbox.
Yeah, because they couldn't get ready on time. Everyone else was so behind schedule that we missed the light window. So we ended up shooting in the middle of the day.
Yeah,
so
we had like the perfect light and then it just went by the time. Right, we're ready now.
The test shoots looked brilliant. And then the actual final magazine cover looked awful. But yeah, I don't know. It's just you've got to move with the times. Like, photography won't be what it is today in 20 years' time, and today it isn't what it was 20 years ago.
No, absolutely not.
Like, you can be that bitter, resentful person who's like, "Oh, I want it to be how it's always been when I was enjoying it," but that's not what it's going to be.
The thing is, all dynasties fall. You know, what's evolution taught us?
Oh, exactly. I mean, if it was up to me, if I could do anything for work, I would be a photographer in the early 90s. I'd be shooting 8x10 tranny. We'd take one frame in the morning, send it to the lab, get it back, go out for a boozy lunch, get paid an absolute fortune, and just live a great life. But that's not the industry today.
Nope.
It's all-encompassing now. It's everything. It's content.
There's almost no walk of life that's got easier, better, with more money and more time. Everything's
gone the other way. Harder, less money.
Exactly.
And, you know, a lot of people, just to give a bit of parity here, a lot of people are, oh, it's not the same. It's not as good as it was in the 90s. You can't make so much money now as you could in the noughties. It's like, you can't, but it's still a lot of money. Like, I'm not saying they were overpaid in the 90s and noughties, but it's not like we're living poverty-stricken lives being photographers. Like, there's worse things I could do for a living, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Financially.
I mean, of course. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of things. You know, you can make a few mil just doing crypto, but where will that be in 20 years?
Yeah.
Where will it be next year? Who knows? You know, it's, you know, nothing is certain. I think that's the only certainty.
Yeah. There is that. Just roll with the punches. Diversifying is something I'm going to be doing.
But I think, you know, kind of coming back to the beginning of that, diversifying, but with still your tone of voice.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's either, if it's on YouTube, it's, you know, this is all for commercial photographers and people who want to, like, this is an elitist channel at its heart, which fulfills my sporting ambitions of my childhood. My photography is very much my bold and graphic sort of thing. And there's a slight tangent here. I also run, because I have three things I do for work, two of them independently make me a full-time living. Hmm. Therefore, if one stops instantly, the other one carries on. So I've always got that, like, I don't obviously spend both incomes because that'd be stupid, but like once
no, but this, squibbled, this again, this is a mechanism you put in place many years ago.
Yeah, because,
you know, with a bit of foresight, because things go wrong.
And, you know, during lockdown, I was lucky. I carried on shooting for a lot of lockdown. I didn't think I was going to be able to, but I could, because of the way the government rules came in, because of my setup, we were good. I mean, you were with us on
I remember on the opposite side of the room, on my own computer.
Came in through a different door.
Through a different door, still masked up. Well, yeah, you know, the full shebang.
That was what were we shooting?
I believe that was a well-known brand of pasta sauce.
I was thinking it was Doritos for some reason.
Oh, actually, it may have been.
Can't remember, but yeah, either way, I was lucky. We shot loads, and I shot for loads of different photo agents as well, because none of them had photographers who could work, so they were all coming to me because I live with a stylist.
Yes.
We shot TV shows in our house, and I shot them with a feed going out the window to the director in his car on the driveway.
Yeah, so I remember some of that.
It was there's lots of things going on, I guess. But because of that, like, that put the fear of God into me, because I thought it was gonna be horrifically wrong. So now I have, at any given time, two businesses that pull in a full-time income independently, just in case. And then I have other interests, because I just think, I don't know, maybe it's probably overly precautious, but there's no one to bail me out if it goes wrong.
Well, no, so, I mean,
there's no backup plan here.
Again, you've had 2007, you know, you had the global collapse, and then you had, you know, the pandemic, and then you had the post-pandemic. It's like, there's no sign of any of this getting any better anytime soon. So
yeah, I mean, I remember coming out of university in 2008 and going to the careers person there. They're like, cool, you can get a graduate job. And I went, there was literally not a single graduate job in the entire country of the year. So I moved to Shanghai. That's where my job was.
And that's, again, you could have taken the option to stay in the UK and like, meh, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Or, I can get a job here, so let's go and do that instead.
Yeah, you just got to keep rolling with it. Just, you know, don't get set in, like, as soon as you go, this is what my career is going to be, it's pretty certain it won't be that.
Yeah.
And you're going to go off in the wrong direction.
You'll find a pothole on the way, even if the road looks smooth.
Yeah. But there we go. Well, I think we'll leave it there for today. Unless you've got anything you want to add?
No.
Have I missed anything important this week?
No, I don't think so. I think we've been a good chat this week.
We had a good ramble. I hope we got enough camera stuff in there for everybody.
Well, and they're all still rolling, so, you know.
Well, all our cameras are working. That's good. Teddy's asleep.
He's took it out.
I don't know if you can see him on any of the cameras. Probably not. He's just behind me, flat out on the sofa, living his best life. But yeah, we'll leave you there with that. And next week we'll be having guests on, which is exciting.
It's indeed. Brave new world.
I'll see you all later.
Adios for now.